Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And I'm not going to make a childish, sophomoric joke about the episode number, as you would expect I would, because you know what? That's just
some dumb. Might argue that it would be most mature to not mention it at all, but well, we've gone with this approach instead.
Vince, or to acknowledge the elephant in the room and to move beyond it, like the adults that we are, you're listening to episode 69 with Sion Richardson, the colorful and creative Kiwi from New Zealand, as is implied by Kiwi, but I thought I should mention for you uninitiated...
Maybe you don't know the
sloth.
Slang.
If you're maybe the type of person who would make a 69 joke just because there's a 69 there, maybe you wouldn't know she's a Kiwi, what that
the
means.
Uncultured plebeians listen to her show. Please. No, she was awesome. She was really candid, really funny, really cool.
Really deadpan and straightforward and kind of badass. Like, made me feel
absolutely
intimidated.
Exactly so. She was really cool. She's a designer by trade. She makes really cool things. And now she is moving on her own. That's exactly what we do on the move. When do you know that it's time to shake things up in your life? And how do you kind of calibrate your trajectory with your motivation? It was a pretty cool conversation.
Yeah, she was a badass, and I think for context, you should pop over to Fresh by Sion, that's S-I-A-N .com, and just look at some of her work and some of the things she's offering up there. She's cool. She's a real cool Kiwi. And another cool thing is Sanebox, this week's sponsor. Big ups to Sanebox. I've said it before, I'll say it again, Vince. They keep my email life clean and clear and under control. This is their tagline.
Crispy.
Yeah. No, they really do. It simplifies my inbox, keeps it organized, filters out a lot of crap. You'd be surprised. I've looked at a lot of email systems, like things that integrate, and this one really is just like the best in my opinion. It integrates right into my Gmail.
I've seen you use it. I've seen, and I've already talked about it, obviously, yeah, a dozen times probably, and it's everything you say is true. It's just the best at what it does.
Totally. So if you're interested in that, you really should be, head over to sanebox.com/AD/10KHRS. That's sanebox.com/AD/10KHRS. Thank you, Sanebox.
Thank you, Sion, for your time on the show. And thank you this week and every week for your listenership. Listeners, enjoy episode 69, Making Moves.
Dude, it's actually, we're on a hot streak here. I feel like listeners won't
appreciate it.
Well, they might after we explain it.
They appreciate nothing. Ungrateful sods, the lot of them.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know why we do this thing. I hate our audience. But I love you, so that's cool. But I was going to say there's not as much time as there typically is between recordings. So I feel like I'm pretty up to speed. I'm going to ask anyway, and I think maybe for that reason, the lack of space and the increased proximity with which this question will come, I want to additionally increase the length of the question leading up to.
Oh, okay. Now. I'm finally tracking. It took me a lot of seconds to get on the same page of what was going on, but here I am.
Mission accomplished. Vince, what are you putting your time into? What are you working on? What's up, buddy?
Thanks for asking. I am still putting a lot of time into my freelance client, Bluebird Gardens. They're awesome. I like them a lot.
As we discussed in the last episode, yeah, that is just a little woman down the hall from you who has a small pot of two or three succulents.
Yes, exactly. I think she's expanded. She's expanded. She now has one of those little plastic triangles that has an herb in it.
Oh, nice. And so, an air plant as well? One of those with
no,
the roots?
No, that died long ago.
Okay. No, Bluebird Gardens, awesome community source agriculture client that's here in the Twin Cities, and they're really great. Like work with them. Busy at work as well. And I just signed for the lease on a new apartment.
Ooh, you did. Congratulations.
Yes, so I'll be moving in just over a month.
Lovely.
So that's been keeping me busy.
I can't wait to visit. I visited your old place like once.
Well, to be frank.
Yeah, are we friends?
We're friends. I visited your place hundreds of times, but
yeah.
Mine was not much to look at. This new place
would
be better.
We had the pod set up over there, so that's fair.
True, true, true. Grant, may I return the question?
Absolutely, Vince.
In the last 24 hours, what have you been putting your time into?
Honestly, packing. I'm heading on a bit of a trip here. I go to LA tomorrow. Doing a little scouting and prepping for this thing I'm shooting in a few weeks. And I'll probably shoot some photo sets with some people out there, which I'm excited about. And then I go to New York on Saturday, which is in just a few days from recording, but all the time lines are going to be messed up. If you're listening to this now, sorry, I hope we're cool. And I will actually be there, as I said, kind of before we started rolling, with friend of the show, friend of the guest, who we won't introduce yet. But you can hear some snickers just in the background. David Cherry of Death to Stock.
Yes.
And I'm super excited. I'm going to be hanging out, making some stuff in New York. I'm going to, I think, end up making a little video about a helicopter ride we're taking
and
with some photographers.
And you're also going to spend some time with former guest. And
yeah, friend of the show, Young Godin.
Yeah, Mr. South Godin.
Mr. Young Godin, as he's often introduced.
By his peers and mentees alike. That sounds sensational, man. I can never keep track of your travels. You're always just walking a path around the
follow
world.
Follow me on Instagram. I feel like I'll post a photo occasionally, and you can stick with me that way. Or actually, if you would return any of my texts.
Hey, wow.
If you look the entire right side, there's like 25 just unreturned texts. It's like, hey, Ben, what are you up to today? Hey, do you want to hang out? Hey, are you cool? What's up? Hey.
And then every 25 or so, it's like one blue text that says busy. And then it's back to 25 gray texts.
You send this like weird do not disturb. It seems like an auto reply, but it isn't.
But it has a spelling error, so I clearly wrote it, but tried to make it look like an automatic reply.
You bastard.
Grant, you're going to be going all over the country, and you have before gone all over the world. And our guest today
is in the world.
She's in this world of ours.
Which, incredible, right?
First of all, what are the chances? What are the odds? But more to the point, she comes from a far off land, and she's very hospitable for calling in and joining us today. She's from New Zealand. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sian. How is this on? Sian.
Yeah.
That's good. Sian Richardson. Heyo. I think we would agree on the title Creative Kiwi, yeah?
Yeah, that sounds good.
You're a New Zealander. You're doing some cool stuff. You've got a nice design aesthetic rocking over. Was it freshbysian.com?
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah. I feel like that's a good context starter for anybody who's listening. Just pop over there. Poke around, if you will.
Look at it while you listen.
Have a bit of a walkabout.
Yeah.
That's the thing you guys say, right? Anyway, thank you so much again for joining us, and allow me to do the honors of asking you, what have you been putting your time into lately?
Lately, I guess so, with my business, like I've been doing one-on-one design work for the last few years, and I'm kind of switching that up at the moment and moving to more like product-based, like digital products and stuff.
Yeah.
So I've been jamming on some new stuff there, which is fun.
Jamming, I like that term quite a bit. I use it frequently.
Yeah, so that's mostly what I've been working on, and just trying to explore the homeland at the same time.
So, yeah, you mentioned explore the homeland. You haven't been... How long have you been in New Zealand for this most recent bout?
What is it? Must be like 9 or 10 months. I think I got back here in October, so...
Is Peter Jackson sort of milling about the hills?
Can you see him? Can you spot him out your window sometimes?
You mistake him for a sheep.
Well, that's really cool. And before that, you were in Canada. Before that, you were in Sydney, Australia. And
before that, at some point, you were in a womb of some sort, I would imagine.
That would be correct.
Well, then we've got you all figured out. No. We get to the bottom of it here on 10,000 Hours.
It's a life story right there.
But we are excited to talk to you because, as you mentioned, you have a design background originally, but now you're expanding into different types of design, different types of creativity in general.
Yeah.
And the topic that we're addressing today really goes hand in hand with your personal story. And that's why we're so excited, beyond just your cool work and your cool story, how applicable it is to what we wanted to talk about. And that is making moves. So yeah. Making moves in the sense of knowing when it's time to change things up or to branch out or to get out of your comfort zone or to just turn everything upside down. Grant, I know you have made a lot of moves in the time that I've known you. And I think, maybe everyone has had moves on different scales. That's what we're trying to talk about today.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't want to say life is a game, but I mean, I feel like especially some of this stuff is kind of a game. It's kind of fun. And it's fun to like look at it through the lens of moves as like, some strategy.
I totally agree. I think as a kind of a jumping off point, if I could ask you, CN, to tell us your personal story, and we'll kind of use that as a lens to explore the topic.
Yeah. So I guess if I start like when I was studying design, because that's, sort of when it started. So I studied design for about 3 years, and I got a full-time job in Australia. So I made the move over for this job. My very first job, like that only lasted like 2 weeks. Like it was a nightmare. I got fired. / I quit at the same time. Like it was really bad.
You can't fire me. I quit.
Yeah, it was kind of the same thing. It was not a good situation. But and then I found another job pretty soon after, and I had that one for about 2 years, and that was just working as an in-house designer doing like printing and signage and like magazines and stuff, but it wasn't that creative. So that was the job that I eventually quit to like start my business and go into self-employment.
And how long has that been since that point?
What's that?
Like, how long have you been, or like how long ago did you leave that job?
That was just over 3 years ago.
Sweet. I also really like the phraseology you use on your about page, the 9-to-5 nation, leaving the 9-to-5 nation, or is it cubicle nation, something like that. It was nice. Yeah. It was catchy.
Yeah.
So I would like to explore that actual moment if we could, because I think that's what is the most compelling part about making a move, because it's easy enough to imagine your future doing this thing you want to do, and it's easy enough to stay in what's comfortable and safe and working, but that moment of transition is both the hardest part and the most rewarding part in many ways. So what did it feel like and look like and seem like to you while that was happening?
I think it was one of those things, like I kept telling myself, like waiting for the perfect moment. And then eventually I realized, I was like, okay, the perfect moment, like that doesn't even exist. That's not even a thing. And like the perfect moment happens when like you like make the decision to do something. Like, so I think because I was in my job for less than 2 years, I only had to give like a week's notice or something. So I like had it in my thing one Friday and I was like out the door the next week. So it happened pretty quick, but it was like, I don't know, it was so scary because I think that was like the first time I'd ever made like a really big decision like that. And I had no idea what to expect because like, I mean, I'd been doing freelance for like on and off before that. So I had a few clients and stuff, but beyond that, it was just like, I think the biggest thing for me was like going from like having it all laid out just to go into like having no idea like how much money I was going to make, where I was going to be living, like what my clients were going to look like.
I mean that is one thing that I think is overlooked, because I mean, we talk a lot about freelance, we talk a lot about that sort of work, and one thing that is like supremely overlooked is the number of things that are taken care of for you at a job. You know, so many things, so many moving parts that are designed to help you just do your job. And I mean, you kind of have to take those on or sort of rework what's important to you or what's necessary for you if you're going to be your own boss, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So a tension that I see, and this is even present in my own life, I'm very happy at my job currently, but you always think about your next move and what the future looks like, and if you want to do what you're doing forever, for how long you want to do it. Was this something that was planned out for you? Did you kind of have it in your mind that you wanted to be on your own, and you set sort of a course into action where you were working up and toward this branching out? Or was it kind of spontaneous? Did you just decide one week, you know what, this is the week, I feel like it, I'm doing it? Or was it, basically, did you have a plan, or did you kind of just react on instinct?
Like, I didn't really have much of a plan. Like, up until about 6 months before I quit, like, I hadn't even considered self-employment. I was just like, I just like accepted that, like, being a designer meant sitting at a desk 9 to 5, whatever, and I didn't even think anything beyond that. But, like, and then I started to, like, get more into social media, and I met people that were, like, self-employed, and I was like, fuck, like, I could actually do this. So I started, like, blogging and, like, getting clients through the internet and stuff, and then I realized that it's what I wanted. So I think it was maybe, like, maybe even, like, 9 months before I was, like,
the seeds are
starting to realize that it's what I wanted. And then eventually I got to, like, almost breaking point where I felt like I was going to lose my shit at my job. And I was like, no, I can't do this. So I just, like, had to quit. Otherwise I was going to
Be
full on crazy.
That's a, also, what did you say? Fuck. I feel like I can do this. Oh, no, wait, fuck. I want to put that on a shirt. Maybe. I feel like that'd be pretty sweet.
I can't remember what I said. Yeah,
fuck. I feel like I can do this. I think that's an accurate paraphrasing if nothing else.
Yeah.
But that's a thing that I think a lot of people, like, sort of misread or get a little too impatient with, is like build up the volume or like get to your capacity before you know, it's like, oh, I have like one client, I need to jump ship. And then it's like, well, no, you don't have any more work from that. It's like, it's really hard to fill up the cup of a freelancer, you know?
Oh man. Yeah. But you're stepping on the toes though of, like, it's very fashionable to talk about the sexy parts of it. Like, oh, you know what? I've had it with 9 to 5. I'm going to go my own way. If my heart's not in it, why am I doing it? I'll find the clients later. It'll work out as long as I chase my dream. But I guess what I'm hearing from both of you in a way is that's not how it happens in reality.
Here's the irony though. So I had written down here, you know, if I'm feeling something, I'll write it down. I'd written, you can create the feeling of destiny, and then I led that into jump and a net will appear, which is to kind of bounce from what you were saying, Sian. I'm saying it right? Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Very insecure about that. I'm so sorry.
He's shaking nervous over here.
No, but it's like, I think if you're at least somewhat self-assured, you can make decisions that feel like a form of destiny, right? It's like, well, I'm making this decision. It's happening. I'm creating this. And then it's like you look back and you can sort of post-rationalize anything you decided on.
Yeah.
And that's kind of great, actually, because it feels like it kind of gives this, like, Cinderella element to your story. It feels like, oh, yes, this is, like, all meant to be. This is all purposeful and awesome. I mean, and frankly, it's kind of like, well, no, you're creating that. You know, and that leads into jump and a net will appear, which is, yeah, just go and you're going to figure it out. I mean, that phrase seems like that someone else is going to put a net there, but really, you're probably going to be the one to build your own net as you're falling there. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, so I'm countering that whole idea by saying this. I'm not necessarily countering it though, Vince. What I'm trying to say is, I think people who are not prepared to build a net decide to jump. I say jump and a net will appear to people who can build a net, you know?
Right.
You know? And there's a huge difference, you know?
The problem is you'll never know if you're that type of person, right? Until you jump.
Well, I don't know. Like, it's pretty obvious to me though. I mean, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, you might fall flat and then it becomes pretty clear.
So I think
as they pick you up off of the floor, they're scraping your veins.
They power wash you off the ground. I guess my question for you, Sian, then would be, did you ever feel during this transition, once you put in your week's notice or once you started to branch out on your own, did you ever feel like it might have been the wrong choice? Did you have any qualms, any concerns, or any fears?
I was, like, absolutely shitting myself. It's just because it was, like, completely different to anything I'd ever done. But I guess, like, at that point, I, like, made the decision that I wanted my life to be my life, not, like, some other thing that was laid out. So that was super scary. And I think, like, the money thing, like, that was so scary because I had, like, think I might have had like $2,000 in the bank. Like that was it. That was all I had. And I had like maybe a month of work lined up in front of me. And like that was it. And so it was like I had to, like there was no other option other than to just like make shit happen.
Fuck yeah.
And like it was like there was totally days where like I was like waiting to get paid. I like couldn't drive my car or like buy food. Like there was parts of it that were like so scary and
preach. Yeah, like, I've been
not
there.
Not great, but
I've been there for sure.
Yeah.
You fight through but, it. But that's a great point though. Yeah. You said like I wanted my life to be my life. And
yeah.
A lot of people are living what seems like a life. It's a thing. I mean, hold on. Let me take a step back. Yeah, yeah. Before you call me out, which would have been fair. I think that a lot of people get a sort of weird gratification. Not weird to me, but a gratification based on what their life means, quote unquote, what their life like is in the eyes of others. And I think there's something to be said about, you know, the impact you can have on a greater number of people and on other people. But I think people get really caught up in the idea of their life and they start projecting that idea onto their day to day. And the idea of their life becomes their life almost in like a weird, like Inception way where they're like, you know, three layers down and they're like just living something that isn't real, you know?
Yeah.
So good on you. Way to take control of it.
Yeah.
And so in that regard, I agree with you 100%, Grant. I think it comes down to because this whole thing was spurned by the fact that you weren't happy. It's that simple. You weren't satisfied doing what you're doing. And so you had to make a move. And that's what making a move is about, right? It's putting your life on a trajectory that's a greater amount of happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. But I think, like, because I was in my job and I wasn't happy in it, like, I didn't realize it at the time that it would lead me to self-employment. So I just started, like, blogging and stuff, like, meeting people online because I needed, like, another way to, like, get my creativity out because I wasn't doing much fun shit at work. And so that's what eventually led to, like, people saw that I was a designer and they were like, oh, can I hire you for this and this? And I was like, okay, like, I could make a go of this. Like, it wasn't obvious from the very start that it was going to lead to self-employment. It was just like, yeah.
You started moving and then you pivot. And
so that brings up an interesting kind of dichotomy. Maybe the difference between making a move and seeing the open move and taking it. It's kind of if we force something or if we let it happen organically. And your transition sounds like it was at least semi-organic. You just started by poking your head out on the proverbial internet. Well, the poking the head out is proverbial. The internet is a real thing. But you kind of just threw some feelers out there. And once you started getting traction, you just followed the progression. And eventually that led you to self-employment. But like you said, you didn't start by saying, I'm going to be self-employed and I'm going to do whatever I need to do to make that happen. It kind of happened. You kind of backed into it.
Yeah, pretty much. But then I think that like when I quit my job, there came a point where it had to be like, this is like what I want and I'm going to do everything to make it happen and like live the life I want kind of thing.
Hell yeah.
So that part of it, like obviously that's not, I mean, leading up to it was organic and it still is, but yeah, there comes a point where you have to be like, make a decision and do it.
Lean into it.
Yeah.
Well, I think, so now it's not a dichotomy at all now that I kind of examine it through that statement. So well said. It's kind of like you need both parts of it. You need
I think you do.
The organic momentum, but then you need to take a very kind of cogent choice and take an active role in your own life at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm curious then. You were sort of alluding to a move you're currently making. So what is the current state of your business or your work or your kind of mentality about that? You said you were moving from maybe a service-based is what I heard to a more product-based thing, which we talked about before. It's certainly more scalable.
Yeah.
When we look at time versus energy versus money versus impact, et cetera, et cetera. But talk to us about that.
Yeah. So I guess I've always been service-based. And I guess because I've done like a lot of my clients do e-courses and all these digital products and stuff. Like I've been helping them design their e-courses and ebooks and all that kind of stuff for like pretty much my whole business, like the last 3 years. So I feel like I've learned a lot about that and I've like finally got to a point now where I have like all these ideas for my own products and stuff. And I just want to like kind of make a switch and go in that direction because obviously it's more scalable and it's that it's just like pulling me towards it. Like, it's a lot of fun to create that stuff.
What kind of products then? Well, I mean, okay. So the primary focus was design work then?
Yeah. When I started.
Service based design work. Yeah. I would say last few years. Yeah. And then now, where do you see the product stuff going? Or, I mean, if you look through your blog, there are obviously some things that are like products, right? Like, the branding stuff, the guides. Where do you see that stuff going?
I would love for that to be like the core of my business, like within the next year or so. Like, I would love to have, I have one course at the moment. It's called Be Unmistakable. It's like a branding course. And I would love to expand that and just kind of maybe make that a signature thing and just see how it goes. Because I started quite small on that, so I just want to expand it and work on some other stuff too. Mm-hmm. So
what is that? What is that course? I'm just curious.
It's a branding course. So it's all about what is branding, how why consistency matters. And it's got a bit of design stuff, but it's a lot about just kind of getting clear on your mission and your values and how to bring that to your brand and your website and social media and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
There's one kind of tenet of move making, if I can kind of quantify it into this term, that I would like to ask both you, Sian, and Grant, who I know has done a lot of these in his time. Have you ever realized that a move happened only kind of in retrospect? That at the time, the transition might have been so gradual or so kind of instinctual that you didn't even realize it was happening at the time. And only by taking survey of your past and your life so far can you realize, oh man, that was actually a very big transitionary point for me that I didn't maybe realize on my outward face, but I do realize now in retrospect.
Dude, the irony to me right now is I feel I'm yeah, 100%. But I think it might be part of the destiny mindset that I was referencing before, which is that you look back at everything and it's like, oh, of course.
You want your story to fit your own personal narrative. Yeah. It's a natural kind of inclination. But that said, if you have kind of an objective level of self-awareness, you can.
You put the piece. I think for sure for me, I would say more so in the past couple years. And I think that also coincides with things that I look at as maybe more chess moves now. Or more longer reaching, trying to see further ahead in the game versus pure effort or pure output, to try and win the game by aggressive, whatever.
Sheer force of will.
Force of will, absolutely. But I will say it's cool to, and again, maybe I'm just assigning these values retrospectively, but I will say it really truly does feel like some of the things that I've been building toward weren't obvious to me right away, but I see the path back, and then I kind of see where that goes better. I think definitely filmmaking for me was I was really interested in this, and I didn't realize it consciously, even though just some of the stuff I was consuming, the way I started consuming it, and then at a certain point, reading screenplays a bunch. And still wasn't And then I was I think I want to make films. Must be films. What I'm leaning. Yes. And I think I'm starting to trace that back. It's still super early stages, but obviously you're literally seeing the fruits of it, music making or DJ stuff, some of those things. I can trace those roots back and I start to see kind of the trajectory and the roots of it. So yes.
Yeah.
What about you, Sian?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it, because I guess I hadn't thought about it like that before, but I guess something I was kind of jamming on this with my coach not long ago, but it's kind of like we were talking about how I'm kind of changing direction and how it's weird to let go of my business as it has been for the last 3 years and kind of go this new way and sort of maybe it was – this is how it was supposed to go. Those 3 years of the service-based stuff was leading me to this product-based stuff, yeah. which feels like this is where I'm supposed to be going. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this makes sense, but it's kind of like, how do I, yeah. It's sort of like changing direction, but letting go of where, yeah. what's got you to where you are.
And you accomplished, right? And it feels like, I mean, that's that's what a lot of our stuff, if we call it that, our work, it seems like we're like building towards something, and then you get to the thing that you were maybe chasing, and you're like, oh, wow, I have to kind of like let that go, because that you realize maybe that's not actually what I wanted. And it's not that you're in a perpetual state of unrest, but kind of. Your coach isn't Chris McAllister, is he? No. Do you have a Kiwi coach?
What's that?
Who's your coach? Is he local?
No, she's Canadian. Okay, her name's Steph Jagger. She lives in San Diego, though.
Okay, that's awesome. I thought maybe like because of your connection with David from Death to Stock, that it would be Chris McAllister, who was friend of the show. He was a few episodes ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
He seems like he'd be a really good coach.
He seems, and he's like a good person. I think you guys are illustrating an interesting point. We're like, you can never, let's say your life is drawing a picture and you can only see in front of the pencil. You don't know what you're drawing, but when you look back, you can sort of piece it together.
Yeah.
You can sort of take survey and see the context of the things that you're interested in, and you get the big picture of it. And it can help you guide a more purposeful route in the future.
Yeah, certainly. That was... I drew another visual 10,000 hours famous moment. What we like to do is we like to talk about what we can see or what we're drawing
and alienate the few listeners that we have because they can't see it with us.
Okay, I can describe this in pretty good detail, I think. One line segment, pretty short, if you will, maybe an inch, and then a longer line segment, maybe 3 inches, if you will. And that leads to making moves over time. So I think my retroactive sort of piecing together of the story or of like, because honestly, a lot of this is very much leaning into the intuition, leaning into the like what feels good and kind of not like we talk about self-awareness almost constantly, but sometimes and oftentimes our self-awareness involves like knowing that we don't know. And I think over time, it's not that you know, well, It is. To a degree, you know more about yourself, or maybe you know more about what you don't know. But the point is, I think over time, as you get more in tune with the work you're doing and with yourself, it's like you can see further back and you can see further forward. Like if our whole life we start as a baby, we're just in fog. I think as we get going, maybe the fog disperses or we have better vision in front and behind. And it's like you can sort of see where you came from and then you can kind of see, project that out a little bit further. And I think it's like incredibly valuable.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think from a strictly mathematical point of view, the more data you have, the more, you know, better your projections are.
I think you could probably apply that mentality, especially a mathematical mentality, to making moves. You know, okay, so let me say this.
Okay.
Okay, a lot of people are very caught up in the idea of making moves. They're caught up in the idea of, like, winning.
What's next?
Yeah,
how
winning
do I
the
win?
Game.
Yep,
like,
yep,
how,
yep.
how do I be successful? How do I... And honestly, that idea is something that's really turned me off from maybe what we would call, like, a self-help internet or, like, some of the product-based stuff even we're talking about, Sian, like I sometimes get twisted about it. Like, and I did that Skillshare class. I did a Skillshare class called Go Plus Do. But like besides that, I haven't done a whole lot of that sort of thing. And there's nothing wrong with it. But sometimes I get like freaked out by that layer of the internet, which to me sometimes feels like it's obsessed with winning. Like in a very almost cult-like religious way of like, oh, no.
Oh, certainly.
So there's that. And I think you can make a lot better moves when you're not trying to win, when you're simply trying to like, I just want to like stay in the game. I want to play a great game, you know? It truly is that. And it's not that there's no cutthroat nature. I would say like, I definitely have like a cutthroat side to me even in terms of like trying to cut through the bullshit and just like, you know, maybe win the game, but not in those terms of like success and external gratification. And I feel like winning the game of like, of impact and of pretty much self-happiness. That's like way more important.
It's like, I think it's a difference between like winning your own game and like someone else's, like all the other bullshit that everyone's telling you need to win it. It's like,
fuck yeah.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that a bit lately. Like, just how, I don't know, like, everyone else is talking about their own, like, secrets to success and all this other shit, when it's really, like, you got to figure this stuff out for yourself. And, like, obviously, like, all the products and stuff are awesome, but at the same time, you got to just be like, okay, fuck this. I'm doing my own game now. Like, this is me.
Yeah, well said.
Another t-shirt?
And another t-shirt.
Fuck this. I'm doing me.
Yeah, exactly. Really, a really good point. A punctuating point, I might even say. Because in the end, it all boils down to understanding what you actually want. And if you don't understand that, all your moves are going to be made in vain anyway. You're going to be moving into the dark. You're going to be shooting from the hip. And it's not going to be rewarding. Or if it is rewarding, it's going to be on accident.
Falsely rewarding.
Exactly. Maybe even to a negative degree. Let's talk about another big move in our lives. Maybe not in my life, not in Grant's life. No. I don't think. Maybe in your life. I actually have no idea, Sion.
I'm going to guess 90% no.
Wow.
Okay. Just based on the sheer number of fricatives of obscene remarks I'm hearing. No, I'm just
no,
kidding.
Yeah.
That's not
total right. Jokes. But a move we make each week is into a realm of kind of non sequiturism, and we talk about the off topic topic, which is something that's not germane to the discussion at hand. This week we're talking about a big move traditionally in at least Western culture, but cultures all over the world.
Yeah, most cultures. Yeah.
It's marriage, and more specifically, weddings. So we are asking your opinion, Sion. What do you think about weddings?
Oh, man. What do I think about weddings?
Married, right? Have you had a wedding?
No, I'm not. Hitched.
Hitched, as they say. Hitch was a classic film, by the way. Sorry. It was a film movie.
Will Smith's best work.
Yeah. What do I think about weddings? I don't know. Like, I'm not in, like, a serious relationship or anything. I guess I haven't put that much thought into them.
Have you been to one recently?
No. When was the last time? I was, like,
attended
a few years ago. Yeah.
Wow.
I went, like, one of my friends I studied design with, I went to her wedding. That was, like, that must have been, like, 3 or 4 years ago.
Wow, okay.
Longer than that.
I feel like our culture in general / especially if you have a lot of, like, where you come from, hometown-wise, you know a lot of people, I feel the wedding invite is pretty liberal in terms of, like,
man. Oh, wow.
I met you one time at, like, a bar.
And in the Midwest, the weddings come fast and loose. People get married young and frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, we have a Mormon culture, so it multiplies.
No, we don't. For our international listeners, that's only one specific part of Utah.
Yeah.
Now, weddings, all right, Grant, what do you think of them? Are you a fan? Do you like them?
Yeah, I think they're generally fun, but, like, I'm that, okay, let me just say this. They remind me of, okay, well, first off, and maybe I'm just protecting myself. Maybe this is me being insecure about, like, about to shit on something that people.
We're on like a whole minute of preamble, I think maybe. Yeah,
okay,
it
so my thought is, weddings to me remind me of a lot of things in people's lives that they do because they think they have to, and I mean that both in the, like, getting married sense and in the attending of the weddings. Okay, I pray to God he's not listening. And not actual God. It's just using it as a term. I'm like nervous now with the wedding speak. I feel like it's like kind of a religious thing generally.
God's listening now. And if you're like, if you step on his toes extra bad, he might smite you.
Okay. And if our editor's listening, he'll put a lightning strike in here, a bit of a smite. sorry, we like to keep him in check. So my roommate of many years in college, is getting married to the girl I introduced him to.
That's a lot of pressure, first of all.
Yeah. And, like, I, like, don't want to go to their wedding.
What? You don't want to go to... So, we won't name them by name, no. But...
okay, that's... Okay,
you don't want to go?
That's not fully true. I just feel like... Okay, well, maybe. Maybe. I just... Time is precious, and I just feel like sometimes, like, there are relationships that it's awesome, and especially depending on how you view your time and what you're doing with it, et cetera. It's like, dude, it might be the best thing ever to go celebrate and go do those things. But sometimes I'm just like, no, I want to do something else with that time.
I want to travel. I want to not do anything.
Any of the other and oh my God. Okay, what was this? I was talking with some people about this recently. I don't know why the subject came up, but oh, you know what it was? Okay, I was in Denver a couple weekends ago, and our friends who I met, and I met some Aussies there. Sorry, this is just really getting me going. I met them at Coachella, and they're getting married in like a couple months, and they're just guilting us. Like, oh, you have to come out to our wedding, blah, blah.
This is in Australia.
No, excuse me. It's in Denver.
Okay.
But it's in October, and it's like, we were just there. We just saw them. I became friends with the groom-to-be at Coachella, which was awesome. We bonded, whatever, and they're awesome. But like, I don't want to fly out. I would much rather spend that weekend I would rather go somewhere with my girlfriend.
Yes.
Or like 100%.
Yeah, or do any other number of things that you know, feel compelled to do on your own volition.
And then they were talking about like being a bridesmaid and how much it cost, and like these bachelorette parties with old friends who ended up being like, this girl was describing this bachelorette party in Las Vegas, and she's like, I was like crying like halfway through the night because I realized they're all shitty people and we were all just like acting really shitty. I was like, ah, this sounds like a nightmare. This sounds like a dip back through like the worst part of time. And it's just, this is certainly not everyone's experience, but I feel like weddings end up being this, like, they can be totally beautiful and totally awesome if the, let's say, the bride and groom and all parties involved like lean into the awesome, as opposed to like embrace the almost, there's nothing wrong with tradition, but if they embrace the like the nature of tradition, which is sometimes just stepping too far back, honestly, and it's like it's like a high school reunion.
You make a lot of good points here, Grant.
I love weddings. What about you, Vinny?
Well, I just want to touch quick and agree with you that anything you do out of obligation to tradition or to appease other people, you're really asking for trouble.
Yeah.
You're asking for a lot of trouble. You're asking to hate it and to waste money and for it to suck and for no one to enjoy it. And that is a huge part of weddings, and it's one of the many reasons why I love weddings.
Yes.
I am crazy about weddings. Weddings are one of my favorite things in the whole world. I love happy weddings. I love disaster weddings. I love every type of wedding. Whenever anyone I know goes to a wedding, I make them give me the full detail. What did the bride look like? What was her dress cut like? What was the cake? How were the speeches? Was it an open bar? I want to know everything. I think they are... Aside from the fact that when a wedding goes right, there's really no happier place on the planet than you get to watch two people who are really doing a wedding the way they want to, joining in happy union for the rest of their lives. And it's fun, and it's exciting, and it's cute, and it's great. And there's just a lot of good things about it. Now, beyond that, when it doesn't go well, it is the greatest spectacle you could ever hope to see. When there's drunken in-law drama, when there's people screaming at the live band because they forgot to bring amps, anything that happens that causes chaos is also great. It's a no-lose situation.
Yeah. Respect. I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you spend time watching wedding videos on YouTube?
I have watched several hundred wedding videos in my time as an internet consumer, yes.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Yeah, I watch a lot of wedding stuff. I like Weddings Gone Wrong, great wedding speeches.
What the fuck?
I love these real shows.
Oh my God, dude. You're like... this is beautiful. This is amazing.
Oh, I love when you watch like a best man or a maid of honor speech that really... tear jerks the whole audience. That's one of my favorite moments. And it's one of my least favorite things about going to weddings is because most speeches are so bad. People phone them in, or they don't practice, or they're bad natural speakers. It makes me really sort of kind of conscious of who I'm going to choose as my best man. I have one brother, and I don't think he's going to make the cut, even though I love him dearly. I don't... He's kind of an introverted guy.
Dude,
he doesn't.
I really hope those who are like perceived as close to us don't listen to this episode.
It's going
to
be a bad one for them to tune into. That's how I feel about weddings. I love them. I love them dearly.
Wow, man, that's incredible. I've also thought about like wedding DJs, And I feel like that would be like a nightmarish ordeal as far as like DJing goes. You know what I mean? I think it's like an unwinnable situation.
If the couple has a very active role in choosing the playlist, I think it's like, then you're just basically an MC and that doesn't sound so bad. But
you're probably better off for it if they like know the thing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. You're just like, you're essentially playing a show for like people who don't, who aren't there to see you. You know what I mean?
True. Here's a personal question that I'm going to take absolutely no consciousness in asking.
How big is the dowry in New Zealand?
Would you ever want to get married, Sian?
Will you marry me, Sian?
Maybe. But I think, like, for me, it's never something that's felt, I've felt, like, obliged. Like, I need to, like, get married and fucking have kids and all this kind of stuff. Like, if I found the right person and, like...
But you don't feel compelled?
Whatever, maybe. I don't know. Not really. Like, it's not some, like... It's, like, I'm not one of the people who's, like, dreamed about their wedding for their whole life and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that makes one of us, Sian.
It's not something I spend a lot of time...
Wow!
Even if I never get married... Actually, even if I meet a wonderful woman... who doesn't want to get the government involved in our special union, I think we'll still have a wedding, even if we don't have a marriage. We'll just have a celebration.
This is amazing, man. Like, I am so looking forward to the day that I hope that comes. And I will say, as much as I shit on my roommate who I didn't want to go to their wedding, I do, maybe you want to go to their wedding, but I want to go to yours, Vince, because this really truly does sound magical.
It would be fun.
But honestly, you know what that is? That's what it is. And I'm sort of not wrong, but I think I can see a fault in my thinking in that, like, they are pretty awesome. Like, when you go to a wedding, when you're finally there, it's actually really good pretty much always. But I guess the point for me was just, I'd way rather just be spending it with people who I really give a shit about. And oftentimes those things force you into situations with people who you're
you don't
kind of
really
like,
give a shit about.
You're
kind
of just don't really give a shit about.
Except for the old grandma dancing with the little toddler girl
so
to
cute.
A slow song. Now, those are two strangers that I do give a shit about. All right. Yeah. What a matrimonial discussion.
It's incredible once you get on the dance floor, just like how many people who in their daily life seem to sort of be stagnant and sort of flatlining, but you get them on the dance floor and they're making moves.
Get a
someone else entirely and the dance moves are inspirational.
Certainly.
That's the true move of the heart. And let's make a move now back to the topic at hand and talk about a couple of questions that we have for you, Sian. We like to ask these to every guest. And if you'd be...
Put a couple of questions here.
Oh, God. We've made it through almost the whole episode without an offensive Australian question mark.
It's a bit in between. It's a bit in
what
between
even was that? Come on. I don't even know. This is like a British Australian.
I've got some friends in.
Okay.
The accent.
All right. We'll move on, and I'll jump into these questions, Sian. And you can just answer these in order. How can our listeners support you? And secondly, if you'd want those who listen to our show to take one thing away from your time here, what would you want that to be?
First question was, how can our listeners support you?
Oh, please.
Second question was... I know.
It is so Australian. You need to go YouTube
to a New Zealand accent. I've got an Australian bite to me.
Oh, okay. This has gone on for several seconds. Please. All right, please. I apologize on behalf of my co-host. Oh, it's a mic issue.
It was a mic. It was out of tune.
Okay.
I turned on the effects key. Wow, I'm so embarrassing.
All right, please.
So how can our listeners support you? And if you could leave them with only one thing. Okay, sorry. One thing. What would it be?
How can they support me? I guess want to purchase any of my stuff or follow me on social media, anything like that, that would be awesome. And I guess the takeaway, like my kind of mission is just to like help people realize they can carve their own path and just do things their own way. Like that's my big thing. just like get out and do what you want to do, like regardless of what you're being told you should do or what you feel pressured to do.
I think that's really well said.
Just get out and do what you want.
Perfectly illustrates the whole reasoning behind making a move in general. It's choosing the path for your life. And
yeah.
The move is when you realize that your life is going down part of the path that you didn't want it to go down or that you don't want it to go down any further. And so you make the switch. And it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of bravery. Or sometimes it just happens. And however it is, it just serves us well to be cognizant of it and to look back on the times that it's happened before and hopefully let it guide us in the future.
Isn't that the opportunity? I think the opportunity you're both alluding to is to be active in your life instead of to be passive.
Mm.
And I think it's like very, very hard and it doesn't necessarily get easier. I think it does generally get easier. Is making a move to me requires like thought, like cognizant thought and awareness of the current situation and engagement in your present life. And I think when you truly try and make a move, like if we equate this to a chess game or to anything, if you make the move and you acknowledge that this is your intended move, which is really hard to say, like, this is the thing I'm trying to do. It's the same as saying, like, I'm quitting my job. I want to be a photographer or not even I'm quitting my job. You know, any number of moves, you know, on the small scale, making the move, acknowledging it, owning it, you automatically almost learn from it because you're going to get feedback in some way. Did the move work? Yes or no? Even it like work in the way that you thought.
Yeah.
It might even worked better, but just like it's essentially like forecasting. How you get better and better at forecasting because you make a move, you learn from it. You make a move, you learn from it, and that just sets you off down a fucking path of like, boom, boom, boom
of righteousness. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think it was really, really well summarized by you, Cian. And a great conversation. I want to thank you again for taking the time. What time is it over there in New Zealand?
Yeah.
It is 11 a.m. on Wednesday.
It's like the 19th.
Is it the 19th?
Oh,
yeah. August.
Spooky. It kind of freaked me out.
Yeah. So when we post this, should we post it like a slash, like a double, like we'll post it on like, let's say like August 28th/29th or something.
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's only fair. And speaking of fair, I'm going to be unfair and request one more thing of you. If you would, Cian, we have a tradition here on 10,000 Hours where we have our guests sign us off
in the States.
This is, it's a Yankee tradition, if you will, by giving us and our listeners our catchphrase, which is ship it, very much in the same ethos of making moves. It's doing something, being active, participating. If you would, give us a ship it in your own way, and then you're free.
Get out there, make shit happen, live the life you want to live.
Vince often tries to explain this last portion to our guest, and certainly not our guest's fault. but for some reason, when Vince explains it, I feel like it doesn't always fly.
It almost never goes through.
We're going to rewind, and now let me try. Let me take a step. Let me make a move, if you will. Cian, we sign off with ship it at the end of the show. If you could say ship it, just whenever you're ready, just give us a ship it, that would do.
Ship it.